You're listening to South Florida's good news station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Or now I'm supposed to talk. See, Pastor Dave here, he likes the music. He doesn't want to have me talking until the music is done playing, right? You wasted 8 seconds of my precious time there, Dave.
I know. I'm sorry about that. I'll make it up on the other end.
There we go. 1-888-221-8990. 888, that's toll free now, 888-221-8990. From any place, anytime, toll free. Joe Martech's here to answer questions, to help you any way I can. And let me just explain who I am for those of you that haven't listened to the program and why we're doing these shows. Joe Martech's a financial advisor. I'm also called a stockbroker. I'm also called a securities principal, which simply means I've got lots of licenses. I've got clients all over the state of Florida, primarily on the Treasure Coast, but also in 13 other states because people move and referrals and whatnot. But in my not too humble opinion, and I know that doesn't sound correct, but I mean it. In order to be a credible professional, you no way in the world can help all your clients with every question they have. So in my, again, opinion, credible professionals align themselves with other credible professionals to help their clients. That way, if you call me up with a question that I don't know the answer to, if I know another person that I trust that has integrity, experience, I can refer you to them, and I feel good that they're going to give you the right advice. So starting a little bit before 2004, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, Greg Fasula, attorney, and Joe Martech, financial advisor, started doing these radio shows with the purpose of answering people's questions to do with insurance items, the law, and money. Now, over a period of time, we also added Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, who's only been in real estate since 1978, because those of you that have lived in Florida for a while have seen some extreme changes in the real estate picture, and we needed to have somebody that could answer those questions, especially when new words came up like short sales and there was deed backs and foreclosures. We needed somebody that could give the straight skinny, which then led us to Mr. Mike Polis, mortgage broker. Well, all of us heard not too long ago that there wasn't mortgage money available, and the media was saying one thing or another. And I feel like Trump's one of his kids, because fake news, it was never true. There was always mortgage money available. The new rules were, though, that you had to prove that you could afford to make the payment. Can you believe what a scenario, right? Mm. Can you afford to make the payment? Prove to me that you can pay that $1,000 a month house payment, or $500 or $600. And if you can prove to me you can make that payment, I'll give you a new mortgage so you can buy your house. And that's what a mortgage broker does. He works with you to make sure you get qualified so you can buy it. And then last but not least, Vince Rosino, CPA. Well, tax code changes constantly. It's about 70,000 pages, simplified, of course. But the rules are constantly changing. New things come along. And I needed to have somebody that could give me the straight skinny on what is happening when it comes to money, starting a business, closing a business. What's the best way to incorporate or not incorporate a business? There's each individual person stands on their own, and there's no two exactly alike. So when we put the group together, it was simply a matter of finding local professionals with credibility, respectability, integrity, biggest word, that we could depend on, that we're here to help people, and that we're not new in business. And that was a big thing to me, Because new people have a tendency, in my opinion, to make more mistakes than people that have been around 20 or 30 years. Like anybody that's lived in Florida for any length of time, we see businesses come and go constantly. But somebody that's been around for 10, 20, 30 years, you start to have a new feel that they must be doing a pretty decent job to stay in business where everybody knows everybody. Now, this phone number I'm going to give you is important, class. You're supposed to write this down, because even if you don't have a question today, somebody else you talk to might have a question, and you can call this number anytime, and Pastor Dave, Pastor Tom, Karen, somebody will take your name and number and tell us to call you back. So keep this number handy. It is 1-888-221-8990.
888-221-8990.
So, Pastor Dave.
Yes, sir.
Have you had any words of wisdom this week? Any questions? Anything come up that you're curious?
Nothing wisdom-wise from my end, but before the program, you were sharing some wisdom about investing in the stock market.
Right.
And those, you know, what to think about on the plus side and on the minus side.
Well, let me share that.
Excluding the politics part.
Excluding politics.
Yeah.
So what's happened is most people have heard of the Dow and the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. In about that order, most people know what the Dow is. The Dow is 30 companies. And what happens, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is based on these 30 companies. And these are some of America's biggest companies. And that number is a composite aggregate of the stock value of all of these companies. And that stock value aggregate composite number changes daily. Every day the stock market is open, that number changes. Well, today is a monster day up because I'm guessing the Trump bump, meaning last night he did what would be considered a State of the Union address if he had been elected for a whole year, but it was called a joint session of Congress speech that he gave, basically saying, here's what I hope to do, and here's what I'm going to do, or here's what I want to do, and here's all that good stuff. And it seems to me that most people right now are a bit positive on the general complexion of what's going to happen with America for the next period of time. So the stock market, when we look at these indexes, which is the Dow, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, they represent the value of these composites of all these companies. And normally the values that they post on a daily basis are guesstimates of what's going to happen 6 months to a year from now. So we have in the stock market what's called a price-to-earnings ratio. Price-to-earnings ratio. So let me just give you a quick scenario. I'm not going to go into a long dissertation. But when we have a price-to-earnings ratio of around 10, that's considered good. Under 10 is considered superb. Over 10 starts to get not as good. When it's around 20, that probably means the market is full, that the price of the shares of stock are maybe not overpriced, but pretty much up to high as they should be. And that's where we are today. We're pretty much close to that 20 number. Now, does that mean the stock market's going to go down or going to go up? No, because here's what happens. These companies project ahead what they're going to do. So let's say it's General Motors, and General Motors is cranking along producing 10 cars. Well, all of a sudden, if they start producing 11, that's a 10% growth. That's a monster number. Well, then their stock value might go up accordingly. Mm-hmm. Now, if all of a sudden they're producing 10 cars and they go down to 9, whoop, all of a sudden their value might go down 10%, which could create a correction in the stock market. Now, I'm giving you a stupid example, but the reality is this. Right now, the market's hot. People are making money and everybody's excited. Some of the old soothsayers say when everybody's excited like this, it's time to get out because the market might be overpriced. When do you want to get in? Well, if you're a trader, you want to get in when everybody's depressed, when it's low, when everybody just lost their shirt. That's the time to buy because now we got a good way to go up. Am I saying that's going to happen? No. Do I think it's going to happen? And I really don't. I think the next year will be a great teller. Maybe the next 3 months will be even a very good teller, because if our president can actually accomplish some of the things he's talking about, you will see momentum gather, and these companies will expand. And as they expand, they may make more money, and then the stock market goes up. So literally, this is a simplification now, and it's not 100% at any one time, but if a company is making money and growing, their value goes up. If a company is losing money and not growing, their value goes down. So it's no different than you and me buying a local restaurant down the street that's going out of business because they can't get any customers. Well, we better buy it cheap, and we're going to change the name, and we're going to change the menu, because whatever they were doing was not good. On the other hand, if that restaurant's knocking them dead and everybody in the world's packing trying to get in there, you know, they may sell that for a pretty high buck, and we may want to keep it exactly like it is just to keep it running. So it's not the best analogy in the world, but it's the only one I can come up with at the moment. So what I do for most clients today, if you're young, and I'm talking 20s, 30s, 40s, maybe even 50s, getting into the long-term market is not a bad idea because, hey, I can't tell you exactly, but the truth is, don't be a trader. These day traders that are going to make a fortune, most of them died and lost all their money from time to time because it's very hard to be a good market timer. So you got to look at your time horizon. If you've got 10, 20 years, you've got a long time. But let's say you're old like Pastor Dave and Pastor Tom and even Joe Martek. You know, we're past our shelf life already. So we don't know, but you start to get a bit more conservative, and you're not looking so much to make money. I'm having a senior moment here, but one of the old soothsayers, old cowboy.
Will Rogers
said, I'm not so concerned about making money. I'm more concerned about keeping my money.
Right.
And, you know, literally, when you get older, that's where you are. So whatever you've worked all these years to accumulate, maybe a lot, may not be, but it's called, boy, it took me forever to accumulate what I've got. I don't want to lose it. So normally what I do when I talk to people, we look at different things, and don't get greedy. Stay with this 5 or 6% number in your head. And if you can accomplish a 5 or 6% growth, if the market goes up 10 or 20 and you missed a portion of that, hallelujah, but you got that 5 or 6. If you want to be extremely conservative, well, you go down to the bank and you get one or a half of one. Hey, that's fine. In fact, I had, let me lead you into the subject of 401ks, 403bs, 457s, SEPs, all kinds of different numbers. And I had a meeting yesterday with a listener to the radio who has basically used every member of our team to help him buy a house, sell a house, get it financed, get insurance, everything that can be done. And his significant other just is changing jobs, and she's a nurse, and she's leaving one nursing facility that has a 401k, and she's gonna go to another facility that has a 403b. Now, you have heard these numbers.
Nonprofits, 403B, right?
See? Yeah. Now, because Pastor Dave is a pastor, that's a nonprofit organization.
I haven't made a profit in 31 years.
So 403Bs, that letter, that designation normally means it's a nonprofit organization. 401K normally means it's a profit organization. So what is that? I work for this company, and I'm making $500 a week. And they allow me to take 3% out of every paycheck and put it into this retirement account. And I don't pay tax on that 3%. It's tax deferred. Right now, it's no tax on it. And very often, these companies will say, tell you what you'll do. We will match 3% a year or 3% out of every paycheck that you put in. So let's just say it's $50. And don't forget my analogy of $500. Let's just say it's $50. And they say, you put in 50, we, the company, will put in 50 today. And you know what that is? That's 100% return. If you did it for a whole year, it's 100%. If you did it in one day, multiply 100 times 365, that's what your return was on an internal rate of return, which we're not going to do. But let's just use that number, that at the end of the year, you put in $1,500 into this 401k, and the company put in $1,500, you now have $3,000. You can't make $1,500 into $3,000 without taking extreme risk and speculation. But in this 401k or 403b, if the employer agrees to do that, you have just won. So I look at somebody and I say, hey, look, you're an old person. You're 60 years old. You're going to retire in 5 years or less. Just put it in cash right now. Don't put it in anything kind of investment. You're not going to make anything on the cash, but every dollar you put in up to this 3% limit is doubled. And boy, oh boy, if you can do that for the next 5 years, hallelujah, you just made a bundle of money. Money outside of the employer, you can put into anything you want, but bottom line is whenever they're willing to double your money, you do it. So the 401k, 403b, very often the employer will match up to a certain number, and that's the greatest thing since chocolate milk when it comes to saving for retirement. Now, they're also, very often, they have what's called vesting rules. Vesting. This is not vetting. This is vesting. Vesting simply means, okay, we, the employer, are going to match what you put in, but we're not going to let you have it unless you work for us for a period of time. So we want you, we're doing this, and I call it golden handcuffs, as an incentive for you to stay working for us, the company. So very often they say, you won't be fully vested until you've been working for us for 5 years. Then if you leave, not only do you get all the money you put in, you get all the money that the employer put in. But if you leave in 1 or 2 years, they'll take back a portion or all or most of whatever they contributed because you didn't stay with the rules and stay working for them for this period of time for vesting. So is there anything wrong with that? No. They tell you that up front when you go to work for them. Whether you understand it or not is not important. That's the rules. I've often said this is like being Catholic. Don't ask questions. You just are one. Not the best analogy, but that's mine.
It, just as in terms of vesting, is there a higher percentage of vesting requirements that go on in commercial as opposed to nonprofit, or is it about the same?
I think they're about the same, because what happens is I don't think there's a rule on the vesting on how it works at all. It strictly determines each individual company, whether it's a nonprofit company or a for-profit company. The key thing, that the reason employers do this, is we want to keep our good people. And you know what happens, Pastor Dave, and I'm not a monster Bill Clinton fan, but he's done some really good things. And one thing he said that I listened to on a radio or a TV program, and this was nothing to do with politics, it had to do with his foundation, their charity, but somebody slipped a question in to Bill and said, Bill, what do you think about this inequality of income on jobs? And he said, it'll take care of itself. And the interviewer said, what are you talking about? How can it take care of itself? I mean, it's not fair. People at the bottom, you know, they get taken advantage of and they work, and the people at the top are making all the money. He says, well, think about this. If there's 10 people for every job, 10 people that want that job, they're going to hire the best out of the 10, and they don't have to pay them much because there's 9 other people wanting that job. Right? So when the economy is very poor, we have tons and tons of people looking for work, and they're willing to go to work for a lot less than when the economy was good. Well, guess what happens? As the economy gets better and unemployment comes down, all of a sudden you run that ad, you don't get 10 people interviewing, you might get 1 or 2. In order to get them, you got to pay them more money. Mm-hmm. Well, then the top people start to take cuts in pay, and the bottom people start to get more. Isn't that an amazing thing? And now what he was simply saying was, when unemployment gets down to this full employment number, it's 4 to 5%, you will see wages go up automatically because they have to in order to not only keep, but to get their people. Now, I disagree with all of the stuff going on about entry-level positions. Hey, you know, when I was pumping gas when I was a kid in high school, after school, I'm getting $1 an hour. You know, if it was 90 cents, I would have taken it. If it was $1.10, I would have got it. My next job was $1.25 an hour. Man, I got a monster raise. But I had no skills. I had no education. In order to earn more, it takes skills, time, education, experience. A lot of things have to come in. And you know, and you don't get experience without time. So literally, when employment is full, wages go up. When employment is very high, meaning unemployment, wages are very low for the bottom part of the group, and even some of the middle parts, because If there's 100 engineers out there unemployed and there's only hiring one, that engineer is going to go for work for a lot less money than when nobody's, when the door is full.
Kind of a supply and demand thing.
Supply and demand, and it truly is. And America has been based on supply and demand since it was founded, based on the whole concept of allowing you to go out and earn. And long as you work hard and do the right thing, you're going to do better. There was no government holding you back. So America's always been the land of milk and honey for people that wanted to survive, that wanted to excel and go on. Entrepreneurs, this was it. Everybody knows in America, you have an opportunity where you may not have that same opportunity in other countries. Anyway, that was where we're going. Back to the 401k and 403b or other forms of retirement. So here's rules. When I have this thing with my employer, this 401k, 403b, or whatever form it's called, 457, whatever they want to call it, it makes no difference. The rules are these. You put money in. That's a tax deduction because it's not considered income. It comes right off your income. You don't pay tax on it. And then if you take that money out, any portion of it, before age 59 and one half, not only do you have to pay tax on it, there's a 10% penalty. So you pay a penalty plus ordinary income tax at your bracket, whatever it might be. Okay, after you turn 59 and one half, you can take out any and everything you want out of this account, and there's no penalty. But you will be subject to ordinary income tax or whatever bracket you're in. Now, I've had people say, Joe, I need to get $50,000 out of my retirement account. And I said, okay, when do you need it? Well, I need it pretty soon. And I says, okay, this is October. Can you take some money now and take the rest of it January 2nd? We will now divvy it up over 2 years, and your tax bite might be less if we can spread it out. So you can do a little strategy, but it's not always 100% winning. If I need desperately, then you have no choice. You're going to have to pay the tax. But remember this, the rule is 59 and one half, and don't ask me where these numbers came from. These are government numbers. Some attorney came up with 59 and a half, and nobody knows how or why. But if you take money out prior to that, there's a 10% penalty, plus it's subject to ordinary income tax. After that time, there is no penalty, but it'll always be subject to income tax. Now, next rule. So I put this money in this account, whether it's called a 401k or 403b. Also, it can be called an IRA, which is an individual retirement account. Same rules. The difference is it's not controlled by your employer, whether it's a nonprofit or a profit company. It's controlled by you. Self-directed individual retirement, IRA, IRA. Same rules, 59 and a half. Next rule is, if I don't take money out until I'm 70 and one half, the government says under almost all circumstances, there's a very few exceptions, that I have to start taking money out at age 70 and one half. They call it a required minimum distribution, RMD. And basically, they will look at December 31st, how much money you've got in the account. They will then say you have to take out, when you meet that magic number of 70 and a half, you have to take out a hair less than 4% of the value of that account that year, put it in your pocket, pay tax on it, or make it subject to tax. You may not have to literally pay tax, but you have to report it as a taxable event. You may not have to pay if you're below certain thresholds, but it will be subject to ordinary income tax. And then each year after that, that percentage goes up. Like at 90, if you're not dead, it goes to about 10% that you have to take out. Turn 115, you got to take your last dollar if you're not dead yet. isn't that the magic number for, no, you can't live longer than that?
I'm pretty sure, and by then you'd need all that money.
No kidding, yeah. If you can remember. But the key is the government has these rules set, and whoever is holding that money, whether it's a bank, a stock brokerage firm, whoever's got it, they have to report to the government, and they will send you a letter every year saying you're supposed to take this, and that if you don't take this, you're subject to a penalty with the government, and it's a pretty substantial penalty. I think last time I checked, the penalty for not taking your required minimum distribution was 50%. So it's pretty substantial.
Huge.
So most people take it. In fact, I think everybody takes it that I've ever heard of, unless they made a mistake and forgot or whatever, whatever. But literally, the way all of these retirement accounts work, remember this, whether it's vested, whether the company contributes, whether you just contribute, all the time you're putting money into this account, you're not paying tax on it. So then when you turn 59 and a half, you can start taking it out. And when you turn 70 and one and a half, you're supposed to start taking it out. And then it's going to be subject to ordinary income tax, whether it is 403B, 401K, 457, SEP, SINC, all kinds of different names, but they're all basically the same rules. Now, I had an occasion that happened this week, and the reason I'm bringing it up, that even though some of this stuff is not too hard for me, because I'm getting old, Dave. You ever notice that?
No, I didn't notice that at all.
Yeah, your eyesight is really getting bad, too. I take a lot of stuff for granted because I do it every day, and I'm there to help people, and that's my job. But the reality is this is a bit complicated. So this one particular nurse working for a hospital, and she was working for a profit hospital. She has a 401k, and she's leaving there and going to work for a nonprofit hospital. So they say, well, you can take your 401k and move it over to our 403b. She said, should I do that? And I said, well, here's the problem. The 401k and the 403b, both of them have the same basic rules, but what they are is employer programs. The employer programs are limited and have certain restrictions as they are chartered. So why would I move my 401k over to somebody's 403b if there's no incentive? They're not going to match any of it. They're not going to give me a bonus. They're not going to do anything. Rather than that, I can roll it into an individual retirement account, which I now control, me, the person, and I can have that money wherever I want, and I can invest it wherever I want. I can go to the bank. Can't do that with the 401k or the 403b. I can go to this stockbroker, any broker down the street. And if I don't like that guy after a month or 6 months or a year, I can switch to another guy because it's my own money and I can move it around. But if I'm in a 401k or a 403b, I'm usually restricted as to what I can or cannot do. So I've never found a reason why a person would roll out of one retirement program and put that money into a new retirement program that were sponsored by an employer, because they're all subject to these constraints of that program. And they are not going to match this money that you're rolling. They're going to only match contributions from your paycheck. Now, that's, remember that 100% return on your money?
Mm-hmm.
I put in a dollar, they put in a dollar. That's 100% return. You know, if you were in the bank, it would take you at 1% a year. That's a long time, like 100 years to double your money.
When would it be advisable for someone who to going from one employer to another to roll over? Is there a dollar figure? If you had, let's say you had $200,000
sitting in that retirement,
and you went over to another employer and they asked you to roll it over, so you're missing the 3% if you don't. But it sounds like what you're saying is that you're better off really having more control.
Let me give you this. And there's no reason that I can think of where you would roll that over to another employer, because there's no penalty. There's no nothing. There's no incentive. I've got $200,000. I can either control it myself and decide where I want to go by myself, or I can give it to my new employer and I have to live with their rules. Give me a reason to do that. I have not figured out a reason to do that. So literally, you know, as I was telling this particular client of mine, I said, look, you roll it into that 403B, who's going to be the person that's going to counsel you? I don't know. Well, guess what? If Joe Martek's your counselor, you can yell at me every day. You got my cell phone number. We know what you're doing, and I'm going to teach you. So literally, and it isn't just me. It's anybody that is credible, that's in the business, is there to help you, to make sure you're doing the right thing, to help you achieve your goals, to educate you. Whereas normally, with these employer programs, it's called fill in the blanks. This is where you are, sign here, and we start. And that's just all there is to it. There's not a whole bunch of education, not a whole bunch of counseling. Sometimes they do, but most of the ones I've seen have very little or next to none. So I have not found a reason to ever roll money from one employer to another. I have not found a reason. Does that make sense
in the terms of control.
Yeah. So you have control, but you have more options for where you can invest it when you're not working with an employer. An employer might have 10 or 20 or 30, but there's only 30,000 out there. Not that you're going to learn all 30,000, but just as simple as saying, can I go to the bank inside of this employer program? I've never seen one yet deal with the bank. Well, you may want to deal with the bank or a portion of it to the bank. So let's just take this 200,000 and I'm leaving that employer. I don't have to move it all into one account. I can move it into five different accounts with five different people. It's called a rollover. Anytime you do it, it's a tax-free system. That's why they call it a rollover. You're rolling out of a 401k, out of a 403b into an IRA, individual retirement account, and that can be invested in any number of places that you now control. 1-888-221-8990. Had a new call today, a new subject that I've never had before. Now, it isn't that I don't know about this, but I've never had this question come up. So a young man called up and he says, I've been trying to buy this house. The seller wants to sell and I want to buy. And the title company won't give me clear title. He said, because there's a lien on the house for $20,000 or $25,000, but the seller says there is no lien that was paid off. This isn't fair. Why aren't they doing something? I said, well, okay, here's the question. So Pastor Dave's got this house. He says, Joe, I'm going to sell you that house for $200,000. And I said, okay, but I have to get a mortgage on it, Dave. So in order for me to get a mortgage, it's got to be a clear title, because no bank in the world is going to give me a loan on that house unless they can be in first position as the lender, right?
Definitely.
Okay. So we go to the title company. Title company comes up and says, nope, Pastor Dave, you still owe $20,000 on that house. Pastor Dave says, no, I don't. Title company says, yes, you do. Pastor Dave says, no, I don't. They say, you need to prove it. So this fellow was saying, well, the seller said he'd paid it off. Title company says they're still showing. He says, why don't they do something? I said, well, number one, they're not getting paid to do anything. They're paid to look it up, the title company, and to say, yes, it's clear title, or no, it's not, period. They're not paid to go down to the courthouse. They're not paid to go check it out to see what's going on. Now, if you want to pay somebody like an attorney $2,000 or $3,000 to go do it, I'm sure they're willing to take your money, but they're not going to do it for free. So I said, look, if you believe the seller's telling you the truth, which he does, I said, go down to the courthouse in the county where that house is, and give them the address and the name of the seller. They'll look it up and they'll show you if it's a lien on the house that hasn't been released. If it hasn't been released, it'll give you the name, the date, the amount, the institution. You then can make a copy of that. You can walk into the door of those people and say, hey, look, it, this guy said he paid this off. How come you didn't release it? Then the bank would say, same old. Might have been a mistake that nobody ever got around to releasing it. That has happened. You know, make mistakes. Or maybe he didn't pay it off. Maybe he forgot. You don't know. But literally, courthouse records are public information. Anybody can go in and look up anybody's house, anybody's deed, anybody's mortgages, anybody's liens. These are all public records. Anything that's filed in a courthouse, you can go find out. So I just suggested to him, hey, go down to the local courthouse, happens to be in St. Lucie County, and they'll help you. And these people are extremely very good at helping you because they work for you, technically. You're a taxpayer, and they're working for you. So what you want to do, you go in, and you don't know who to talk to. Well, just walk in the door, and whoever you see said, hey, I need to check on a deed and on a lien. And they'll say, okay, what kind of deed? For house? Yes. Okay, residential house? Yes. Okay, fine, here's where you go. Then you talk to these people and say, hey, I'm looking for a deed on a house to see if it's got a lien. What's the address? What's the name? They'll look it up and they'll show you. Yep, here it is. Here's the date it was recorded. Here's the amount. And it shows that it's still there. Well, can you make me a copy of that? Sure can. And they will. And now you say, okay, fine, it's ABC Bank. ABC Bank's down the street. You drive there with that piece of paper and said, I'm trying to buy this house, and it shows this lien, and the seller says he paid it off. And the bank says,
That oomph again.
Yes or no. And if it's no, he did not pay it off, then you've got to go back to the seller and say, hey, seller, you need to find me a canceled check when you paid it off.
Well, I paid it off 10 years ago.
You know what bank you used? Yeah, I do. Same bank. Okay, we need to go to the bank because they've got those records, and they'll go back and they'll find it. Might take a while, but it all can be done. Got a caller here. We're going to take a call. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hi, Joe. It's Will. You were just talking about my situation.
Yeah, Will. That was nice of you to be listening. Thank you.
Yeah, I do. I enjoy your show. It's very informative. The house, there's no lien, there's no mortgage involved. It was a cash deal, and there was no existing lien or mortgage on the house prior or after, since 2002. And in 2007, you know, when all the banks and all the fault were buying out each other and everything, the bank that he got the $25,000 home equity line with doesn't exist anymore. It's been bought out, and it's part of another company now. But the paperwork is disappeared.
Well, here comes the magic question. If the paperwork disappeared, the new bank has a responsibility and a liability because they took over an existing bank, and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, they control these things, and the situation they have to do is prove that that lien is on the house, and if it is not provable, they have to remove it. Now, you, being a nice guy, have to wear your hat a little tighter and get a little bit insistent. When you find out which bank took it over, you've got to go in there and say, hey, look, it, this bank went under, you took them over, there is a lien on here that should not be on this thing, and if you want to avoid a lawsuit filed by me against you, which is going to cost you attorney fees, you have to remove this lien, and you'll make a bit of a wave, and you're a nice guy, Will, but you need to wear your hat just a little tighter and say, this is wrong, and you guys are liable, and you need to correct it. So you're going to talk to the branch manager, who will then bump you up to a regional manager, who may bump you up to a higher manager, but at some point, you're going to win if legitimately this thing was paid off, and if they cannot find you original paperwork, which it has to be by law, original paperwork that shows this thing was still valid. If they can't find it, they have to release it. Now, understand, you can go to an attorney, and an attorney is going to charge you a couple grand to do all this, or you can start the process yourself and get to a point where, how do I phrase this right? You can talk to me every time you go to the bank, and I'll even talk to them on the phone and get a little bit heated with them, because the reality is this: you're doing the right thing and you want to do the right thing, and if the bank made a mistake, it's not your fault. They need to correct it.
Yeah, but meanwhile, I'm going to lose this deal. My contract, I have a feeling, is going to run out. And
well, here comes the problem. The seller now, this is not your fault you're not closing. This is the seller's fault you're not closing. You have another piece of there that says, hey, Mr. Seller, I, the buyer, can sue you if I wanted to because you're not providing me what we agreed to. So it's not my fault. It's the seller's fault. Now, not that you're going to, or not that you want to, but literally, you know, you could make a lot of attorneys a lot of money because you're in the right, and the seller and the seller's problems are in the wrong. Are you with me on that?
Yes.
So I'm still saying the first step is you go to the courthouse, you find out what is recorded, then you go to the bank that took over the bank, and you show them the documents and say this was released. And you need to get it done because I'm buying this house, and if you don't, I need to get an attorney, and you need to get into a manager and then a regional manager, or depending on how big the bank is. And at some point, you're going to win because you're in the right. However, the aggravation is normally people get an attorney who, you know, uses all the legalese and puts it in writing, and that moves them higher up on the list. But you just have to be persistent for a period of time, and if that doesn't work, then you may have no choice but to get an attorney. And the last but not least, if the seller says tough, you say, wait a minute, we've got a contract, we have an agreement, and you're not delivering your promise, you have liability to me. And I mean, literally, they do. I mean, they promised to give you that house without liens on it.
Mm-hmm.
I know, no fun. But okay, what are you going to do? This, it's either walk away or fight.
Well, the ironic thing is I have an attorney.
And
they're all telling me I have to be patient. Well, it's been 3 months already.
Well, if here comes
and the
problem is the attorneys may not be doing anything except writing a couple letters waiting for people to respond, because I'd say, how much money did you give that attorney up front? Did you pay him $500 or $1,000?
Nothing.
Well, you see, let me tell you this. It's real hard to get people to work if you don't pay them.
Yeah.
So what happens if I'm that attorney, I may be willing to write a letter or two, but if I don't get paid, but if I'm going to really work to do this stuff, go to the courthouse and do what you're going to do, I need to get paid, because these guys make $100, $200, $300, $500 an hour. And so far you haven't paid them anything. So literally, either you can talk to the attorney again and say, hey, look, I talked to this guy, Joe Martek, and here's what he said. Or you go down to the courthouse first and find out for yourself what the story is. You know, work it backwards.
I'll do that.
Yeah.
I'll do that. I appreciate your time.
Okay, well, good luck.
And your advice.
Bye.
Very much. Yes, sir.
You know, it's the journey of life, folks. And you know, it's never that easy. Every time I hear somebody say, well, you need to hire an attorney, I said, well, wait a minute, where am I going to find this gold bar that I need to cash in where I can get the money to pay this attorney to go do what I need to have done? Because it doesn't always, it's not that easy. You know, it's hard to find an attorney work for free. Isn't that an amazing thing?
Even I won't work for free.
Right. You know, it's hard to be a philanthropist with no money.
It's tough, yeah. I think also, I mean, you're talking about this particular circumstance, what you laid out, you know, as he it's layers of energy,
yeah,
that he has to invest.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I guess the bottom line is that how much time do you have to invest in this whole, in, you know, time that
gets, yeah.
Or, you know, then sometimes you need to hire somebody.
See, the other side of the coin, and if you can't afford to hire somebody, okay, you're not going to buy that house.
Yeah.
You know, so he's got a 5-year deal. He's been working all this time to buy that house. Now he can't buy it. Well, guess what? If you can't afford to fire another $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000 to go through court system to buy that house, and you may, you know, I had an attorney tell me one time, he says, Joe, if you're 100% right, you got a 50-50 chance of winning.
Never heard that.
Well, it's the court system.
Yeah.
You know, it's if we listen to O.J. Simpson, he's innocent, right? And he was acquitted. Okay, does that mean he was? Well, nobody knows for sure. But the reality is, in the court system, it seems to me, he who can tell the story the best wins. Mm. And does that mean it's honest and integrity? That's the sad part about the system. It may not be. So yeah. Literally, when I look at this young man, he's trying to buy this house, and maybe the seller's good, and everybody's good intentions, and maybe the seller's telling him the flat truth that the house is paid for. But the bank lost the paperwork. Well, I'll tell you, they cannot foreclose on a house without an original signed note. They can't enforce it unless they can find an original signed note. So if there's no documentation for that loan, they have to release it, or they are subject to censure. And now they've got also their charter. The government is not too happy about banks that try to get money out of people they don't owe. And if they can't prove they owe it, guess what? They got to release it. So I let's just talk about another, when it reminds me of another subject.
Sounds good to me. Go ahead.
So I go to see this client of mine some years ago, and he happens to have another brokerage account with another firm, and he brings it out and he shows it to me, and he says, I lost all this money in this investment. And I said, well, okay, why did you get this investment? He says, well, the guy talked me into it, so I did it. And I looked at that investment and I said, you know, you don't qualify for this investment. He says, what are you talking about? Well, in my business, I cannot put you into an investment that is not suitable. Some investments say you have to have a net worth of $1 million or an annual income of $250,000 or both, because what you're going into is what's called very high risk. Now, it may be showing a great return today, but they has to be for what is called qualified investors. If you're not a qualified investor, and the qualifications usually are experience. One, I know what I'm doing. Two, I got a lot of money. And three, or I've got a lot of income. So I'm able to take these high risk investments and I'm qualify for them. So what happens is this particular guy didn't qualify for that, but the person that sold it to him basically forged or lied and filled in the blanks and said he qualified for it. So I said, well, hey, let's just, I think I can get your money back. He said, really? And I said, yeah. Got on the phone right then and I called the brokerage firm, good solid brokerage firm, and I asked for the manager and got the manager of that office, that branch, and went through the story that I just went through. And she said, that guy's no longer with us, that rep. And I said, okay. I said, this person does not qualify for that investment. They were put into that investment and it was wrong. 5 minutes later, this person came back and said, you're right. Here's what we'll do. We'll give you back half of your money and you get to keep the stock. If you're willing to do that. And the guy said, yeah, I'll do that. Well, it was settled. And immediately he got a check, bam, just like that, because he settled. Now, he might have gotten more by negotiating, but she basically settled with him so that he did not file a complaint against that firm. Because no firm wants a complaint saying that they sold something that was unsuitable for that individual investor, because we have to fill out all kinds of paperwork from a suitability standpoint and find out risk tolerance, all kinds of good stuff. So you hear commercials on TV or on the radio about, oh, we'll get your money back, mediation, all that kind of good stuff. Well, attorneys get involved and they can make a buck doing that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the reality is this, very often it can be settled in 10 minutes very easily just by saying, hey, this is wrong. Brokerage firms don't want to be wrong. They want to be right. They want to do things correctly. It was just an interesting experience. I've had that happen 3 times to me.
That's the first time I've heard of an issue like that.
Yeah. I had another one where the fellow was technically a sophisticated investor, but he was lied to. I mean, there's no way, if shape about it, lied to. He was told the investment was something it was not. And I said, hey, okay, you got to tell him you were lied to, and this is what you were sold. And that guy was gone too. They gave him back 100% of his money. Key is this. This business is highly regulated. If you're a stockbroker or financial advisor, you carry these what's called a Series 7, Series 6, 24. I've got a ton of licenses. The regulations are tough, and they should be, because we're there to protect the consumer, making sure you know what you're doing when you do it, and that you agree to it, and you know your risk tolerance. I mean, if you're taking risk and you're willing to take risk and you qualify to take risk, that's okay. If on the other hand you're not and you do it, that's not okay. So there's rules for all this stuff. Another subject, another goofy one. Some years ago, wife's uncle lived here in town, and one day he comes walking into my house carrying a bag under his arm. He's 80 years old. I hate this part because he's 80 years old and he's crying. I said, what's going on? And he said, my son stole everything from me, forged checks on my account. I have no money. I'm living in soup kitchens. Everything I've got's in this bag. And I sleep with it because I'm afraid he's going to take that. I said, listen, come on in. There's the bed. Let's get some food in you. I'll take care of it. So One, I got rid of the son.
Not illegally.
No, no. I drove him down south and I dropped him off. I said, don't come back. Wow. I gave him $100 and I'm sure he went straight to the bar. He's an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I said, now, the next day I said, okay, we're going to go to the bank and I'm going to get you your money back. He says, well, Joe, you can't do that. I said, yeah, I can. I said, now be prepared to spend the night. We're not leaving. If they want to call the police, that's good, because we'll get on in the newspaper and on TV and on the radio, because if somebody writes a check on your account and it's not you, they forge your name, mm-hmm. and the bank accept it, the bank has responsibility. They're not allowed to do that.
That's why you do a signature card, right?
That's why you do a signature card. So if they accepted a check and cleaned your money out, just because your son is a junior, same name as you, and he had an ID with accept junior on the end of it, and the bank accepted it, and they paid, you know, they gave him all your money, the bank's at fault. I said, now expect an argument. Don't say anything. I'm going to be the nasty guy. You're just going to sit there and look like an old guy, which you are, and we're going to get you your money back. Well, wouldn't you know, I go into this bank, and I happen to have known the bank manager for 10 years, and I didn't even know the bank manager worked there. Took us a half an hour to get him all his money back.
Wow.
Half an hour. Now, the moral of the story was even better. The father really didn't want to hurt his son, and the son's an alcoholic, and you know, not a, mm-hmm. the kid's an addict, and everybody that knows addicts, they're addicts, and that's just the way it is. However, he committed a felony, and the bank put the word out, and the police were looking for him. Well, hey, boy, that not only got rid of him, he had to skip the state real quick so he couldn't get any more of the old man's money because he was gone. So dad got to keep his money. I got to put it back in the bank. And the system worked for dad. Now, again, understand, Joe Martek, I'm a very nice guy, but I'm also not easily intimidated, and I'm not afraid of anybody except women. You understand that?
Understood.
You understand. Yeah. Point I'm trying to say is that I don't think anybody can intimidate me just because I've been around the block and I've helped people and I've done things that just because I know what I can do, that when people say no, no, and I say, oh, yes, yes. And it's also, what's right is right.
Right.
And if it's a wrong thing and somebody's trying to take advantage of you, I'm even more upset. If somebody makes a mistake, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's just correct the mistake. You know, I don't need to prosecute you or anything. I just need to make sure we're back to where we belong.
Fairness.
Anyway, we only got one call from Will, who, well, I'm glad he was listening again today, and he still needs to go to the courthouse. Thank you, Will. Anybody else that doesn't want to talk to me on the radio, really, I'm a nice guy. You could call anytime you want. Just because I'm sounding tough, I'm not. But I'm here to help people. And we've been able to help a lot of people in our different group. And remember this. Our group consists of a CPA, certified professional accountant, which this man has got credentials up the yin-yang. He was a college professor. He's court recognized as an expert witness. He's a forensic. Great guy, good guy. He'll help people. Greg Fasula, attorney. I'm telling you, he's the only attorney in the whole world I'd like to have as a next-door neighbor. He's just a flat good guy. He's a good listener. He's patient. He's not arrogant. He's not pretentious. He's understanding. Just a nice guy. Dan Warren, independent insurance agent. Big word, independent. Independent means he doesn't work for one insurance company. He works for you. And under his umbrella, Dan's got about 100 insurance companies. So 98% of the time, he can get people. In fact, we had one caller on the show here some time ago. She called in, and Dan was here. And she said, I just want to talk about this guy, Dan Warren. She goes, a couple weeks ago, I'm out at my horse ranch out here in Western Palm City, and I see this old guy with gray hair roaming around with a camera. Well, that made Dan real happy because he didn't realize he was as old as he was. And she said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm Dan Warren, and you're talking to us about insurance, and I'm trying to send information into the company to try to get you a good rate. Well, the first underwriter is this agent, and Dan, basically what he did was show everything, took pictures, sent it in as an underwriter, and that particular insurance company got this lady the same or better insurance than she had for $2,000 a year less money.
Wow.
Now, $2,000 is a good chunk of change.
Absolutely.
So she just called in as a testimonial to Dan what he is able to do. And what Dan has done for a lot of people, including me, including most everybody on our team, including Pastor Tom and a whole bunch of other people, his job is to save people money if at all possible. Mike Polis, mortgage broker. I can't tell you how many people he has made happy. He does it in 15 minutes. You walk into your bank, make an application, 2-3 weeks later, they'll tell you yes, no, or maybe. Mike will tell you in 15 minutes what you qualify. And if you've got a problem, he'll show you what the problem is and help you cure it. It might take you 3 months or 6 months to cure the problem, but if you cure it so you can buy that piece of property, that house, hallelujah, you won. Mm-hmm. And that's what Mike does. Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, she's going to tell you the straight skinny on buying or selling, exactly what it is going. This girl is the hardest working person alive. She's just a flat good. I've only known her since 1980, and she's been in the business since 1978. And she's only 30 years old. This is kind of a miracle.
Precocious as a child.
There you go. Yes. So the group is either here to help you save money or help you make money. And more than anything, anytime we can counsel, you've got hundreds of years of experience when we add up all the people in this room. Plus, I can throw in Pastor Dave and Pastor Tom once in a while. They're old guys with experience.
A lot of praying, a lot of knee falling on the knees.
It doesn't hurt.
No,
it doesn't hurt. Except when I was a kid and Catholic and they had wooden things you kneel down on, no pads. Yeah, those knees got permanent bruises.
A few years later, they added pads.
They added pads after I left.
Yeah,
right. Once I got baptized at Calvary Baptist Church, they put pads in the Catholic Church. So we can't keep losing Martex.
No, you can have knee implants, I guess.
Knee implants, right. 1-888-221-8990. This is toll-free from any place. You can call the show. If you don't talk to me live, you talk to Pastor Dave, Pastor Tom. They will take your name and number and have us call you. Dave will call me directly and say, Joe, just got this call from somebody. You need to call them and help them. And that's just what we do. So we've been very blessed. We're very, very, very fortunate. And we've had numerous stories that I can tell you about how we've helped people that aren't necessarily in our bailiwick. But when I've got this accumulated group of people with all of this knowledge, it certainly can come in handy. You don't get experience without time. Anyway, we're winding down. There's another caller, but we're probably not going to have time to take it. But you call the radio station, 888-221-8990. Leave your name and number, and we'll get back to you. What do you think, Dave? Should I say goodbye?
You might want to, but you can do it slowly. You still have 15 seconds.
I will say goodbye until next week. Thank you. Is this slow enough?
Yeah.
So I should say goodbye now for sure?
Yeah, really. Here we go.
Thank you, folks.
You've been listening to the Team MarTech program. The Team MarTech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF MarTech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Polis with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team MarTech is available at 772-678-7725.